skynews.co.uk. BCFM News from the Sky News Centre.
From the Sky News Centre at 7. Ministers have made a direct appeal to individual union members not to strike over planned reforms to public sector pensions. Union bosses say they're still preparing for a mass walkout at the end of the month, despite an improved offer from the government. Cabinet Office Minister Francis Maude wants workers to really consider the plans on the table.
We know that unions are balloting on potential strike action, and we hope that they will all think very carefully about the implications of strike action, which would be disruptive for the economy.
The Greek Prime Minister is facing a showdown with EU leaders over his plan to hold a referendum on the bailout deal. French and German leaders are meeting to discuss his decision, which took the whole of Europe by surprise and sent markets tumbling yesterday. The Newcastle United footballer Niall Rangers has been charged with assault. The striker's accused of attacking a man in the city's big market in August. It means Ranger will face three magistrates this month. He's been charged with drink driving and for being drunk and disorderly in separate alleged incidents. Lindsay Lohan has been sentenced to 30 days in jail after the actress admitted breaching her probation. After stealing a necklace, she was told to work at a women's shelter but missed some of her appointments. The Duke and Duchess of Cambridge have visited a UN emergency supply centre in Denmark, which distributes food and medical aid to famine victims in East Africa. It's the couple's first humanitarian mission abroad. Prince William appreciates it's a difficult time financially.
As tragic and as disastrous as what's going on around the rest of the world financially, I think what's going on in East Africa really puts things into perspective of how terrible a crisis can actually get.
In football, both halves of Manchester are in action in the Champions League tonight. City have a tough assignment in Spain against Villarreal, but United should have enough to beat Romanian team Otolol Galati at Old Trafford. That's the latest. I'm Tim Jones.
BCFM 93.2. Bristol is our community.
The legendary tabla player Zaka Hussain is coming to St George's Bristol on Sunday the 13th of November in association with the Asian Arts Agency. The Masters of Percussion Tour will be an awe-inspiring night from some of India's most respected percussionists. For tickets, go to St George's box office, or for an exclusive 10% discount, go to asianartsagency.co.uk. Zaka Hussain, St George's Bristol, Sunday the 13th of November at 8.
Typical topical Afro tropical show. You're listening live now, 93.2 BCFM. We've got a jam-packed show tonight. We've got Tony Gosling in the studio. We're going to be talking about secret societies, secret orders, and what's going on in the news and what's going to be happening in the future. Big things are coming, people. Stay locked. Have you heard? Mel B's daughter has filed charges against her dad. 12-year-old Phoenix Chi has filed a police battery report against her father, Mel B's ex-husband, Jimmy Golza. Have you heard? Anti-gay pastor has been voted Britain's most influential black man. He is an evangelical pastor based in London and he's just been given an award recently. What do people think about that? You know how we do this, man. It's typical topical Afro tropical show. 93.2 BCFM every Wednesday, 9 p.m, 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. Have you heard NATO has said it's winding down its bombing campaign in Libya? Was the execution of Gaddafi an international crime? We'll be talking about that a little bit later on the Typical Topical Afro-Tropical Show.
Bristol Community FM 93.2.
Have you heard young black males make up 40% of the people in prison in young offenders institutions? That is a sickening figure. The number of men from BME groups in young offenders institutions are said to have risen from 23% to 39% between 2006 and 2010. What's going on with the system, people? The 11th month of the 11th year. It's a significant time, people. Have you heard Tandy Newton blast fashion publication Vogue for the lack of black women that it features on their front covers? Does she have a valid point, or does she just want to be on the front cover? We'll be talking about that a little bit later on in 93.2 BCFM, the Typical Topical Afro-Tropical Show. Have you heard Paul Peters, 33, of South East London, is to appear in court after defacing a memorial for Stephen Lawrence? He was charged with racially aggravated criminal damage, and the two men accused of Stephen's murder are to go on trial this month. Hopefully, we're going to see some justice after all this time. Real people, real talk, the Typical Topical Afro-Tropical Show. We're going to be getting a breakdown from Video Tony about what's going on at Occupy Bristol. Got a brand new Mikey in the Motherland. This one's going to be a hot one, people. Stay locked. Going to be showing you some exclusive tracks. Immortal Technique's just dropped his new mixtape called The Martyr. I'm going to be showing you some exclusive tracks, playing some exclusive rhythms from that. What can I say, man? He's on point every time. Yes, 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 people. You're tuned in again, live to Mikey. And today we've got Tony Goslin, the great Tony Goslin. He's come on to the Afro-Tropical Show. We're going to be having a little chat. I rate Tony. I watched a lot of his I watched recently he was going at it with a Mason on a TV show. He's a journalist. He's also got his own show on Fridays at BCFM. And yeah, man, I mean, welcome Tony, man. Welcome to the Afro-Tropical Show. How's it going?
Thanks ever so much for having me on, man. It's lovely to be here. I was actually down at the Occupy Bristol camp as well last night. I did a 10-minute rant, if you can call it a rant. You know, the ranters. The ranters are actually from the English Civil War, 350 years ago. They had a bunch of people called the ranters who used to go around just ranting, saying, "Look, we don't like what's going on."
Yeah.
And effectively, that's now the place to do it. Well, if you're a ranter me, you go down, you have your little 10-minute rant. And I was talking really last night about enclosure, which is the privatisation of land, which was Britain was one of the first places in the world where they really did a wholesale privatisation, evicting people from the peasants from the countryside. Okay. I mean, if you go over to Ireland and if you go to France, for example, you'll find there's still a big peasant population, small little landowners growing their own food. But in Britain, they systematically evicted people from the land after the Civil War. I mean, it started a bit before that, but the Civil War, it really accelerated. And this is what I think is at the roots of a lot of our problems today, because people need the money.
People need
to
money,
get the
man.
Food.
People need money to get food, to pay the bills. I mean, all the bills are going up. What do you? I mean, do you think they're justified in going to occupy College Green? Do you think they're justified in their actions, Tony?
I think they're honourable, and in fact they're following a tradition from hundreds of years actually of land occupations that we've had here in Britain. I mean, if you go, I'm not talking about maybe this happening now, but back at in 1549, the whole of East Anglia was occupied by the peasants. This is the mid-1500s, something called Kett's Rebellion, where Robert Kett was a landowner who wanted to privatise his land, to enclose his land, but the local peasants came up to him and said, Robert, you said you'd never do this.
Okay.
And he said, well, look, if I don't do it, someone else is going to get this land.
And they'll do it, or the state will do it.
Well, it wasn't. It was actually privatisation. So it's taking it away from public ownership and making it private property.
Okay.
And as you do that, you're getting rid of all the rights for people to graze their cattle
and all that sort of thing. There you go. I mean, that's why we're stuck buying all our stuff from a supermarket now.
So he actually ruled. He went with the peasants. He said, look, guys, since there's hundreds of you here begging with me, I'm with you. And he started an uprising in East Anglia, in just outside Norwich, and he had so many people supporting him. What they did is they went right round Norfolk and round East Anglia, filling in the ditches and chopping down the fences that had been put up over the previous 1,500 years or so. And that was a big rebellion. It lasted for about 2 months. And what he did is he acted almost like as the king of that part of Britain, from underneath an oak tree. Robert Kett. He held court, and if there was someone to be a judgment to be made about, and they were brought to him, one of the things he did is he locked up loads of the big landowners around that part of Britain for stealing the land.
Okay.
He said, this is theft. You've
sounds
stolen
familiar.
The land.
Yeah, does
so we're putting
familiar.
You in jail. And they actually were put into Norwich prison. So that was me and my little rant I did last night down at College Green.
Yeah, man, big. I mean, so what we got you on the show to talk about today, Tony, is the order of... What's the order called again, Tony?
The Order of the Garter.
The Order of the Garter.
Now, this is another thing which is not necessarily very well understood. This is a order of 26 knights which have been going really hundreds and hundreds of years.
Okay.
And they are there ostensibly to protect the crown.
Okay.
Right,
the crown or the queen? What is
the
that?
Crown, whoever, the crown. Whoever the king or queen.
Okay.
Now, the trouble is, those swords, because, I mean, a knight has the right to bear arms, right? In the back in medieval times, it was a big thing. You either had a right to carry a knife or a sword or not.
Okay.
It's a bit like the American gun laws, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah,
now, the Americans said, this is all nonsense. Everyone should have that right, yeah?
Land of the free, isn't it?
Well, yes,
brave.
But look where it's got you. You know, well, you've got lots and lots of guns around and lots of people dying. And I mean, I wouldn't like to come down one side or the other of that particular argument. What I'm really saying here is that the Order of the Garter, the question is, are there swords and their knives pointing towards the monarchy or away from it?
Okay.
Do you see what I mean?
So
as they're surrounding it.
Do you think that this order, this old order, ancient order, is posing a threat to the establishment, or do you think what do you think their sort of premises right now? What do you think?
Well, it's called the Order of the Garter, which is it, because if you go back to the Countess of Salisbury, back when it very first started. Now, the question is, the garter is a traditional thing that witches wear.
Okay.
Right. So people may not necessarily realise that, but is this something to do with witchcraft? Is this a kind of some sort of weird thing around? I mean, I'm not absolutely sure about this.
Well,
but
we always
a question mark about that.
We always hear about the sort of rituals and the sort of symbolism and that which is involved in secret societies. Would you say that the Order of the Garter is a secret society, or is it open to...
Well, it's not open, no. It's invite only,
Okay.
It's a bit like Common Purpose, if you've ever heard of them. They will tap you on the shoulder and they'll say, we want you to do one of our courses. We think you're going to be a leader for tomorrow.
Okay.
Now, this is the thing. If you or I goes up to Common Purpose and say, oh, we think we are leaders of tomorrow, we want to do a course, well, you know, is someone going to pay for us to do a course with them? Are they going to accept us?
So there's some bloodlines involved in that. They've obviously...
Well, I don't know about the bloodline side of it.
About the bloodline,
but it is invite only. This is the key point, you know. So the idea that there's any kind of democracy involved, well, I mean, and this is, of course, why the Occupy Bristol... I would really criticise the way this has been put in the press, because I don't know if you've noticed, but in the national press, all we've heard about is the London protest.
The London protest.
There are protests in Bath, there's protests in Birmingham. Mm. Actually, there's between 15 of these occupations all over Britain. But I've not seen that once mentioned on the national news.
Well, they're not going to broadcast that because they don't want it. They don't want it to spread. So as much as they don't want it to spread, they're not going to let it spread by talking about it or giving a certain point of view that these people have got with it, like, you know what I mean?
Well, it's a shame, because back in the old days, the BBC used to give both sides and would give everyone a view.
Yeah, they're supposed to represent us, but I mean, do they really do that?
I mean, look at what's happened with Liam Fox, for example. This guy has been proven to lie, right? He's in a most key position as defence secretary, and what did the BBC do? They do a very nice interview with him, how he wants to come back into the government.
Another politician which has been caught with his drawers down.
Well, this is it, and why are they giving him the time of day to say, I want to come back and I am coming back into the government, this is my intention, without really doing proper criticism of it? I mean, this is really, and this
who's
is one
got
of the reasons
the BBC in their pockets,
well, which is one of the reasons that I don't think people trust the BBC anymore as they used to, right? Yeah. And I think it's a real pity.
Well, it's the whole mainstream. I see people ain't trusting the whole mainstream information that will be given. They're looking for alternative viewpoints.
Well, and this is up, but also because of the management, right? You've got this whole management tiers above the people who are actually doing the job. I often think, I mean, this is probably the same with things like the post office, sack all the managers, right? Just get rid of them. You're wasting your money on these people.
Yeah, but don't we need managers to sort of control it, to sort of
all you need is someone to pay the wages. Let the journalists get on with their jobs.
Okay.
Yeah? Don't be peering over their shoulder the whole time. Don't be doing constant reviews. Oh, every 5 minutes you've got to then justify this story you did, this story you did. Let people just get on with their jobs.
Okay.
And less oversight, I think, in those sorts of situations. And I think you'll find that they're getting the listeners. And that brings us round to the RAJAR figures, which are the official audience survey figures that come out every 3 months to do with radio listeners.
Yeah, because last week we were at the BBC Radio Academy, where all the sort of radio stations around the local area sort of get together. We were talking about diversity and sort of how the BBC portrays the diversity. How are they really a diverse company? I mean, we got into,
well, that's right, anyone that's interested in radio can join the Radio Academy, and you get invited along to these sorts of events. And the figures just the day after that event came out for Radio Bristol's listening figures. I do have those figures here.
Okay.
Yes, and they've actually, in the last 3 months, Radio Bristol's gone down from, I'm not exactly entirely sure, this is a kind of percentage figure of the possible people that can listen to Radio Bristol are listening or are not listening, right?
Okay.
So you can't actually, it's very difficult to extrapolate these figures. Anyway, they in the last 3 months are down from 8.4 to 4.2. So they've lost half their listeners in 3 months. Now, you won't necessarily be hearing this on the BBC.
Of course not.
But there will be people at the BBC who will be scratching their heads and saying, how has this happened? I'll tell them how it's happened.
They're going to be running around mad. Like,
I'll tell them how it's
happened. They've lost half of their listeners. That's quite a lot.
It is a lot of listeners. And I'll tell you how it's happened, and that is because, unfortunately, people don't really trust them these days.
Okay.
I was talking about the Liam Fox story. There they are putting out a thing saying, oh, Liam Fox, you know, he's going to come back. No, he's not going to come, I don't think. Is there any chance whatsoever of him coming back?
Well, he shouldn't come back. I mean, he's been shown to be corrupt.
And and many, many people rely on him being not corrupt, lying.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the most important thing. If you're shown lying, and he has been shown to have been lying.
Extensively.
The chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the top military person in the country, almost as soon as he was appointed, said, who is this man Werity? Where's he come from? What's he doing? And it turns out that this Werity guy is not just doing a charity. He's coming along to intelligence meetings between the British and the Israelis.
Okay. Well, you see that? I mean, it's just showing you the amount of corruption that's in the system. I mean, we're going to get back into that in a minute, Tony, because, boy, we've got a lot of real talk. I'm going to go into a track by Steel Pulse called Ku Klux Klan. Big track. When they released it, still a big track now. Hope you enjoy this, people.
Community FM 93.2.
Yes, 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 people. If you just joined us, you're listening to the Typical Topical Afro Tropical Show with me, Mikey. I'm covering for Cyrus the Virus while he's away, doing his thing. During the break, during that little music there, me and Tony were chatting about the police state and how the mainstream media sort of talk to their consumer, to the public. I mean, here at BCFM, there's so many different people that's actually involved in BCFM. You're going to get information which is diverse from a lot of different people, and we're one of them that gives it to you. Tony's got a show, he gives it to you in a way which you don't get from the mainstream media. Why do you think that is, Tony? Why do you think that the BBC and other mainstream outlets are so scared to give you a real and more of a definite sort of perspective?
Well, it's a really good question, and I think it's because a lot of people are actually in fear of their jobs. There's a lot of fear around in these places that they don't want to step over that line and upset the management. It's in a way what I was saying before about we actually don't really need so many managers, maybe one or two, but that's a large part of it. Also, there's something called MI5 and the Christmas tree files. If you go back a few years, you'll find there was a blacklist of people like me that was actually at the BBC, and people were sacked simply for their political views.
Wow.
It's called the Christmas tree files because on their personnel file, the left-wing people, basically left-wing or communists, sometimes these people weren't actually communists, but they were just, they'd been confused with someone else that was a communist. They'd have a green Christmas tree stamped onto their personnel file, and that was the only sign. It was a secret symbol basically saying sack this person at the first opportunity.
Wow.
Is in the book Blacklist by Richard Norton Taylor, who's now the security correspondent on The Guardian, but he wrote that it was in the late 1980s.
Okay.
And they discovered that actually MI5 had a secret office in the BBC personnel department where they were trying to get rid of left-wing people from TV and radio.
So wait a minute, the MI5 was working with the BBC
Secretly. Yeah. Behind the scenes. So they were basically gathering intelligence on people.
But I thought they were independent outlets.
Well, at the time, it was the Cold War, you see. So the argument was, oh, these people might be working for the Russians, so we must make sure that they can't be broadcasters. Actually, the fact was, you know, this is absolute nonsense. It was just an excuse to skew away from a proper left-wing and a trade union point of view.
Well, it sounds like the war on terror. Like,
so what we end up with, at the end of the day, is a kind of situation where a lot of people are a bit nervous. They don't want to be controversial. Actually, what people want to listen to on the radio is a bit of controversy, as far as I'm concerned.
Of course, man.
And also,
hear that, don't they?
We get this kind of really sort of dumbing down type presenter on the BBC nowadays, particularly on local radio, where they talk to you as if you're about sort of 12 years old. Now, I think particularly for the older generation, they find that irritating, and you know, people that will think, oh, I don't like the sound of this, I'm going to switch it around, and then they find a station like us. That's actually what's happening. I think people are migrating away from the traditional mainstream media, and what should happen, of course, is that in a dynamic situation, the managers at the BBC would pick up on shows like this and put us on, you know, and we would get a bigger audience.
That's what should be happening. Actually, but they don't want to let that do that.
Well, they are also in fear, you see, from their bosses, you know. And these are the bosses you never hear their names. The people who run White Ladies Road Bristol on radio and TV, the output editors at Points West. Okay. Can you name them?
Nope.
Right, well, you never see them on the camera, but these are the people making decisions about what goes out and what doesn't, or at least trying to. And the union I'm in, the National Union of Journalists, what we try and do is sometimes get stuff out when the managers are trying to stop it. I'll give you one example from a few years ago, when the editor of the Bristol Evening Post was accused of racism and taken to the Commission for Racial Equality at the time, and he was condemned by them. Now, the output editors at the BBC tried to censor that story, but a brave reporter at the BBC, correspondent, actually said, "No, we're going to transmit that story tonight, and you're not going to stop it." So you find that it can be a bit of a battleground, the BBC, particularly the breakfast show they have every morning. The production of that is quite sensitive. There'll be certain people that may not appear on it where other people will.
I mean, the way when you're talking about censorship there, I mean, I see the censorship with the recently with the whole Gaddafi got killed, and it was sort of all over the papers and things like that. Why do you think they censor war? Like, why don't they show the true, like, what war actually looks like for the people to see? This is what they're sending their kids to. Like, do you think that it will sort of change the people's perspective on war?
Well, the thing I think is really obvious about that was that we didn't see really any gory, nasty pictures of the victims of our bombs, the NATO bombs, whereas when it actually came to Gaddafi, we did see that.
We've seen it all, but we didn't see NATO doing
just the one. And I personally don't think they should have transmitted those pictures at all.
They shouldn't
in,
have done
in
them
the daytime.
Night, no?
Maybe late at night after the watershed. Certainly they should not have been showing those to young people, children.
Well, it was all in
it's going to be really
well,
frightening for young people. They get very confused. Is this a drama, or is this news? Is it real or not?
No, it's
mummy,
democracy. It's
you know?
Democracy.
And there is it's very, very... The other thing, of course, with the whole Libya coverage was we hardly saw any interviews with people who are Gaddafi supporters at all.
Of course not. Propaganda.
All the deals behind it, like the things to do with the the Libyans having their own financial system and not being in debt to the IMF like we and most of the rest of the Western world are, gone into. And also the very, very strong interest from these three big oil companies, Total, the French company, BP, and Exxon, the American company.
Who do you reckon had first dibs in Libya?
I would say Exxon, probably the Americans. You know, this is an aspect to it, was that a lot of the action was actually done by the French and the British. Right, whereas actually a lot of the support work was quietly behind the scenes done by the Americans. For example, all the refueling tankers as our jets are flying in to bomb innocent people in Libya was done, the refueling was all done by the Americans. So they were behind the scenes,
so they tried
to keep their hands clean,
they tried to keep their hands clean, but there's blood on all these people's hands as far as I'm concerned.
And the other thing is, we've got in London still, we've got the Libyan royal family who've been sitting there patiently all these years waiting for a new dawn, a new horizon in Libya. So actually there was some stuff came out in the press as soon as it happened about them, and then completely disappeared off the internet. That, in fact, an article I got a copy of disappeared off the internet completely.
Okay, you see, Tony gets
so
the
there's
excuses.
A sensitivity about the royal family, because we, of course, back at the end of the Second World War, we installed the royal family in there.
Yeah, we installed it. So I know, I like how you use that word, installed. We put what we wanted to put there. So when we say puppet dictators and all that, there's a serious meaning behind that, and there's people that actually pull the strings on these people, like, you know.
Yeah, but this is medieval style techniques for taking over countries. Like, if you've ever seen the amazing film Lawrence of Arabia, because in the light of the Arab Spring, get that, borrow that from the 20th century flicks, whatever they're called, and sit and watch that. It's a 4-hour film, I think, and it's one of the only films I've ever seen where halfway through it comes up with intermission, you know. There's a big screen which lasts for about 5 minutes saying intermission, because it's such a long film. But it throws an amazing light on the way that the British have manipulated, and other countries of course since the Americans, since the Second World War, have manipulated things right across the Middle East, and of course they're still doing it
today. They're still doing it now. If you look at Africa, look at what they're doing in there, man. I mean, it's, as far as I'm concerned, it's a new scramble for Africa's resources and all
that.
But we're going to go into that in a minute. Right now I'm going to play for you the newest, freshest Mike in the motherland. Yeah, listen to this, people, because this is a really serious guy, Ashra Crazy.
People are poor, and you know, damn real, nobody wants to be poor. This player's gonna show how the pigs react when the people start to take community control over what belongs to them and liberate it back.
Myths and facts of untold black history. Mike in the motherland. Typical Typical Afro Tropical Show.
Murderation, modern handgun education. Price of your life is going up, it ain't inflation. Incrimination, they got my picture at the
Hotep, and welcome to Mikey in the Motherland, where me, Mikey, presents historical information, facts and myths of black history. Sorry, our story. Hopefully, this segment of the Typical Topical Afro Tropical Show will enlighten you to information that was left out of your history books.
Yeah. Many people have lost their nation. Have been conquered. Many people have been.
This one right here is for the people.
And yet, our laws are singularly the greatest laws of any people in human history. Our laws were so great that it was difficult for us to recover.
Yes, 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 people. Over the course of November, this section of the Afro Tropical Show, dedicated to showing you a side of Africa, the motherland, that you don't normally see in the mainstream media, will be listening to the great teacher, scholar, historian, and lecturer, Ashra Kwesi. Ashra Kwesi spent 14 years of his life as an apprentice in Kemet, also known as Egypt. He was an apprentice to the renowned African Kematologist, Dr. Yosef Ben Yakanan, known affectionately as Dr. Ben. Brother Kwesi also performed extensive field research in Sudan, Ethiopia, and Kenya with Dr. Ben. Ashra Kwesi now continues Dr. Ben's legacy of educating our African people on the African Nile Valley. He does this with his wife, Mishra Kwesi. In this episode, Ashra Kwesi explains the origin of the Adam and Eve story, where this story was taken from, and how we can understand it.
Our African ancestors, brothers and sisters, saw the matrilineal system. Keep in mind that all the kings had to come through the line of the woman, is that right?
Right.
What man can say he didn't come from a woman? Please step forward so we can understand where you came from. So our ancestors had no problems understanding that divine principle of that sacred womb where we all came from. That was the basis and foundation of the goddess principle and the matrilineal system in Africa. And our ancestors saw, in order for the king to rule the throne, like you have Ursa Maatra here, the goddess Shishat. Here you see her in the tree of divine wisdom, giving the fruit of divine knowledge and wisdom in order for him to rule the throne. It had nothing to do with no tree of good and evil. The patriarchs who came from the north, the Hyksos and others, who had a misogynistic nature, a hatred towards the woman, could not conceive of a woman nor a goddess giving a man anything. And that story was corrupted. The tree of divine wisdom and divine life was corrupted into the tree of what? Because here we have that they created in their biblical stories and the opening of the pages in Genesis that there was Adam and Eve, is that right? And they were not to eat of the tree of what? Knowledge of what? Good and evil. Now who was seduced by the serpent and ate from the tree? That's why, sisters, you gotta watch and hear that sound. But anyway, here we see that she was seduced to eat the fruit, and then she seduced who?
Adam.
Adam. Now, we are told that that's the reason for the world's sins of this first woman eating of the tree of good and evil. And that that's also not only the reason for the world's sins, but her monthly cycle is to remind her of that sin. This is what's taught in the church. Okay? Now, when sisters start jacking that preacher up, who's been equally spiritually enslaved himself to tell that story, and that we were born in sin, there was no story whatsoever in the Kemetic Nile Valley that we were born in sin. So a few years ago, back in 1988, boy, time is fast. Seemed like I just got this yesterday. Brother and sister showed me, they said, hey, brother, Quasi, you see, there was a black Adam and Eve. Although they made a black Adam and Eve, that has nothing to do with our story. This is what we see the evolutionists and creationists fighting each other, and in no anthropological studies did black people were first, so they put a black Adam and Eve, and gave Adam a jerry curl, and gave Eve a weave. You know, they had to be looking good for each other back then, you know. But it had nothing to do with our story, brothers and sisters. Even though they make it black to make you accept it, this is not still an African story. The African story is the God of...
Rest in peace.
Here's another warrior song. Bring that breath, this life to the fullest.
Rest in peace.
Yeah. Mother, say a prayer.
For brothers who die from black on black violence.
Rest in peace.
You ain't paying respect when you supposed to.
Bring that breath, this life to the fullest.
Rest in peace.
Yeah. Same to y'all close to them.
Yeah. Rock Raider. Yeah. Rest in peace. Here's a toast to the dead. If you don't drink, smoke to the head. For the freedom fighters killed by the feds. For those who died hard in the streets, soaking in red. And died slow asleep in a dream, choking in bed. Here's a toast to the dead. For my enemies that are gone. I'm not a coward, so celebrating that would be wrong. I pray to God that your soul will come back again. So I can see you in the next life and finish it then. A toast to the dead. For criminals burning in hell. I wonder how many presidents are burning as well. Emperors, popes, senators, generals, amputees feeling lucky until they see the vegetables. A toast to the dead. For those who are forgotten, written out of history by the corrupted and rotten. Black saints whitewashed during La Reconquista. Thousands of Indios, Spaniards used to conquer the Incas. Of a moment of silence, I need a moment of violence. Like the 19th century Caribbean islands. Long live those who came before that paved the way for me. The warriors and scientists that came before slavery. And if that last lyric was predictable, take that clear avoidance and apply it to life in the physical. Presumptuous, half-hearted, homunculus. Self-destruction is the power without knowing what the function is.
Here's another warrior song. Breath this life to the fullest.
Rest in peace.
Mother, say a prayer.
For brothers who die from black on black ground.
Rest in peace.
You ain't paying respect when you supposed to.
Breath this life to the fullest.
Rest in peace.
This ain't for y'all. This goes to them.
Yeah. Yeah. Rest in peace. Here's a toast to the dead. For all of my fam, I will never let an idea die with a man. My rhymes are like Nazca lines designed to give a view of this. J Dilla's still alive as long as his music is. A toast to the dead. For rap legends and pioneers, your legacy won't be forsaken as long as I am here. Knowledge of the past and wisdom of the present I teach and leave in the hands of a worthy lieutenant. A toast to the dead. For children with cancer and AIDS, a cure exists and you probably could have been saved. Sad to see medicine, divorce, morality, corporate home wreckers, paping up the salary. A toast to the dead. For those that have died today, the victims and those exonerated by DNA. The only thing worse than giving freedom to the guilty is killing the innocent and leaving your soul filthy. Immortal technique, remember me when I'm gone. I encrypted my lyrics to stay alive in a song. So you'll always keep a piece of my spirit inside when you struggle to complete what I started before I died. But some of you won't survive the changes the earth makes. Swallowed by tsunamis, hurricanes, and earthquakes. And that's just the first stage if you cannot reverse ways and realize that we are one regardless of our birthplace.
There's another warrior song.
Immortal Technique with Toast to the Dead off his new album, The Martyr. Big things. So, Tony, we're coming to the last part of the section with you, Tony Gosden. It's been great having you in the show. Getting the knowledge, like, you know, so
thanks, Mikey.
What have you got? What have you got to
tell
people?
Well, we were just talking about the medieval techniques, weren't we? This is the idea that you know, there were techniques out there in medieval times where people could be enslaved, but we're in the internet age now. Yeah, and actually we've got a very knowledgeable population. There's an explosion in knowledge and freedom of travel around the world, all this sort of thing. And it's a different age. And it seems that the secret government is what I would call them, the ruling class's secret methods for deciding these things.
The
secret government haven't actually really realised the implications of what the internet really means. It's not just the internet. They're still trying to use ways to control the mass media when the mass of the population don't trust the mass media. They believe their own propaganda, but we don't. And most people, and particularly young people, don't believe that propaganda anymore. Like old Soviet Russia, you know, Pravda. We used to be told about Pravda. Isn't it terrible the Russians have a magazine, a newspaper called Pravda, which means truth, nobody really believes it in Russia? Well, I'm afraid that's exactly what is happening now here in Britain. I talk to the older generation people and they shake their heads at the BBC and they say, well, what's going on there? And they'll watch Russia Today, they'll watch other things. I'm talking about, you know, my immediate acquaintances, people in my family. They are really not conned by the sort of mainstream media propaganda anymore, like the Sky News, this kind of thing.
Well, times are changing, man. People are sort of
the origins of the internet are fascinating, by the way. DARPANET was created by the American National Security Agency in the secret state in America as a defense mechanism in time of nuclear attack, right?
Okay.
So you do that, you superimpose that idea on the idea of lies and truth, right? What happens is the internet detects lies as damage in the network and it roots around them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is the beauty of the internet when it comes to people trying to lie.
It's a double-edged sword to them, like, you know what I mean?
In a way, it's an insult to be using these medieval techniques now in Britain, right? I think it's an insult, and people will shake their heads, and particularly young people are wise to it. And I think, you know, it's important also to understand there are other angles to this economic crisis, right? Most importantly, look at the Bible. If you go to, Revelation 6, 5 to 6, you'll see there's something called the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, the Black Horse.
Okay.
That Black Horse, is a catastrophic global economic collapse causing massive food scarcity and massive inflation in price of food. So I'm not saying this is definitely it. All I'm saying is we should be looking at it in those terms as well, as the bald economics we're getting on the TV.
Can look at it in them terms. I mean, look at what they've just said about the world's just reached 7 billion people. Like, the way they're pushing out is like, it's getting too much, too overcrowded. But I mean, Tony, we could go on all day, man. I mean,
okay, finally, the Jubilee, right? The Jubilee, which is what the vicars, the Dean of St. Paul's in London and here in Bristol at the Cathedral, were talking about the Jubilee. This is in the Bible. This is in Leviticus, and it talks about every 50 years you need to have a renewal, right? That is to say, everything needs to be reshared out again, right?
Whoa.
Now, how many 50 years have we had since everything was shared out properly again? Every individual on this planet needs land. They need space to live, for a house. Have a bit of a place maybe to grow some vegetables and a little place to put his shed to do some work.
Self-sustaining.
This is the old style peasant economy, which every good society needs to be based on people having those basic rights.
We need to have our own patches of land to
and
grow.
And if
our own
we
food.
Ignore that, we do that at our peril. The reason why is because you look at what happened in Nazi Germany in the 1930s, right? They had a terrible economic crisis there. And when Hitler came on the scene, everyone said, oh, fantastic, this guy's sorting out the economy. So if we have an economic crisis in Europe, in Britain, anywhere, we are paving a way for a new Hitler to come along.
Okay, well, you heard it first on the Typical Topical Afro-Tropical Show. We're gonna see Tony Gosden, when are you coming into the show next time?
Oh, I don't know. Soon, if you can persuade me. I mean, it does bother me, the economy, that we're not actually, through most of the press, getting the... Because it is, a lot of it is technical jargon, and people switch off. I think, when you've got a big economic crisis, we've got to be really concerned that the fascism can rise. This has happened in the past. Racism increases. People are looking for someone down the street to blame.
Yeah,
well, actually, it's someone who's quite deliberately like the Wizard of Oz behind the curtain.
Yeah, someone in a shirt and tie. Okay, Tony, man, blessed for coming into the show, and we'll see you very soon, man.
Cheers, Mikey. Pleasure's all mine, man. Anytime,
Bless, man, bless.
Massive, this is yours, Freddie McGregor, and you're tuning in to Afro Tropical Show with Cyrus the Virus, 93.2 BCFM. And the big thing about you, sir, boss it again, boss it, Cyrus, boss it. You have the virus, boss it.
Mr. McGregor.
Right now, the big ship sailing on the ocean, Afro-Tropical, no need no commotion. Yo, Massive, this is yours, Freddie McGregor. You're tuning into the Afro-Tropical
One,
show
two.
With Cyrus
One,
the Virus. That man that play a pure big tune. Run it to a virus. Run it.
Yeah, that's how we'll do it. 2011, Mr. McGregor, sent from heaven. Kings of kings, lords of lords.
All right, 26 lions. The emperor's lions are like enormous pet dogs.
Yes, 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 people, you're tuned into the typical topical Afro-Tropical show. We've got Video Tony in and we've got yes. Mark from the protest that's been going on in Bristol, Occupy Bristol. We always give you the exclusives here on the typical topical Afro-Tropical show every Wednesday, 7 p.m. to 8 p.m, 93.2 BCFM. So, Tony, what's been going on at College Green?
Yeah, right, OK. Hello, folks. Right, it's what hasn't been going on, really. We've been there about 17 days now. We occupied College Green on the 15th of October. And since then, I mean, the movement has in Bristol, Occupy Bristol, has been growing absolutely massively.
Big.
Every day, Mikey.
We support that, man. We support that on the Afro-Tropical show, man. So what sort of developments have been happening? How many sort of... Have you been seeing a lot of people sort of jumping on board now?
Mate, every single day we get hundreds of members of the public. Up until very, very recently, sort of most of them were saying, what's this all about? So, we've invited them in, we've explained to them what we're doing, why we're there, and how they're affected, really, by the issues that we're there for, the corporate companies, the banks, and government, who are obviously, prepared to act as cohorts,
Well, there you go. I mean, you can see how they're sort of turning, in America, you can see how the Occupy movement is sort of turning very violent on the police's sort of side. I've seen attacks on protesters. Mark, you're down there protesting. Yeah. How do you feel about the situations and the current things that's going on there?
At the moment, I mean, we've always said that our main objective is to remain peaceful. What's going on in America? I mean, they're just escalating the whole thing. I mean, my own personal opinion is that the way the police are cracking down on it, they're almost creating a revolution, certainly, within America.
Like, they're poking it, they're sort of making it, they're getting it more, anxiety is filling up, but that hasn't happened in Bristol, Occupy Bristol yet,
No.
That's good, that's good.
I mean, one of the like I say, one of the things we all agreed on was that it remains peaceful. I mean, we're there and we're trying to create a space so people can come and to talk about the issues that are affecting them. I mean, we like Tony just said, I mean, we're facing a massive economic crisis that wasn't our making.
We're suffering from it. So, I mean, it's not a good thing. I mean, do you see, because obviously it's getting to winter time now, it's getting cold. Is there enough sort of resources at the Occupy Bristol to keep it going, to stop it from sort of fading away, drizzling
definitely,
away?
Definitely. Yeah. The support we're getting from the public daily, it's increasing.
Big.
Yesterday I was through at Bath. They set up the occupation in Bath.
Where did they set up to in Bath?
It was in King Square. I think it was in Bath.
Okay. Busy part of town.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And that was the thing. While we were there, it was just like cars were going around and tooting the horns in solidarity. People were coming up and just saying thank you for being here.
We need this. I've heard it referred to as a peasant's revolt, Do you know what I'm saying? So, Tony,
Mikey, I'll tell you, Mike, there's still this sort of like confusion going on, there's still people. Well, we went to a meeting at the council offices last Friday morning, and the I've forgotten her name now, but the council leader was there, and the dean as well. And one of the things we had to make quite clear to them was that, this isn't going away. This isn't about making a protest, shouting and bawling, waving banners and placards and then going home. We're here to stay. We intend on changing the way things are, the political and the economic situation that is now, enslaving millions of people around the world. I mean, this is a global movement.
It is a global movement.
Well, there are 2,050 cities involved around the world.
Is it the start? Is it the start of the uprisings that we've all been waiting for?
It's the start of the revolution, man. This is the start of the revolution.
This month is a deep month. There's a few esoteric days in this month. Obviously, we've got the 1st of the 11th, 2011. Then you've got the 11th of the 11th, 2011. Quite esoteric numbers. I mean, where do you see that Occupy Bristol sort of has the people on the ground sort of got an agenda? Have they got a specified agenda that they want to move forward with, or is it still, because obviously the mainstream media are reporting that it's all scattered, people don't really
know. Do you want to answer that one, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, it's like there's a lot of people are saying occupy first, then the demands will come later.
Okay.
The demands come in our time, not their time.
Yeah.
At the moment,
I like that.
At the moment, you know, it seems that they are still sat there not knowing what to do. This is the council. I mean, we've split them right down the middle. As of last week, we had the Labour Party and the Green Party come out and pledge their support for us. I believe that the Liberal Democrats are divided in there now. They don't know what to do. I think what's happening, and this is the opinion of several people that I've spoken to, is that they're actually waiting for us to come up with a list of demands.
Yeah.
You know, we're not going to do that because there's nothing they've got that we can demand. We've tried that in the past. It doesn't work. This time we're going to make the changes.
What people want to see is a change in the attitude that these... the 1% have got against the 99%, and I mean, do you reckon it will change? Do you reckon us occupying these cities around the world, do you reckon it will change, or do you think bloodshed is gonna be inevitable? Because if you look at revolutions throughout history, there's always been heads coming off, heads rolling. That's how systems have changed. Do you think this could end like that, or do you think it will be more of a peaceful way? What do you reckon, Tony?
Well, it's a unique situation, Mikey. Never before in the history of mankind has a global movement like this ever been seen before.
True.
Every single person within the movement is saying exactly the same. We are here as a peaceful movement. We're here as a peaceful occupation. And everybody that I've spoken to, and from what I can see, everybody is sticking to that. We're a peaceful movement. And we would like to think that, you know, the opposition, if you like, the government troops, the police, you know, the corporations and all sorts of people that, you know, want to come in and try and do something about it would be, you know, respectful of that and peaceful themselves.
That's one of the strengths I see of the whole movement. Because we're peaceful, they can't do anything.
Yeah.
They don't know what to do.
Well, I mean, look what they've done to the people in America, in Oakland. I mean, they were peaceful there, then you see them getting tear gassed, everything. It's like, do you think eventually that will happen here? Do you reckon?
Probably. I mean, the thing is, it's like what happened in America. I've been watching the whole thing closely, and what happened in America, as soon as the police went in and violent crackdown, the whole of America erupted.
True.
And the thing is,
people are not feeling that, like, you know.
No, and this is it, man. I mean, this is the thing. Whenever peaceful protest is brutally cracked down, there's always without a shadow of a doubt, people are gonna be outraged by it.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Well, we've got to remember as well that you know, it was only a couple of weeks ago, a week and a half ago, that Dale Farm was evicted, and the violence that was given out there by the police. People aren't going to forget about that. That shocked and appalled a lot of people. And I still get every day people coming up to me commenting about that. You know, what about if they do the same as they did at Dale Farm? You know, people are outraged with that, Mikey, and I think people all across the world have had enough of it.
Yeah.
People have had enough. I mean, look, the weapons they're using against people to evict women and kids.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
it's all taxpayers' money.
Yeah,
I mean,
they're using
people's weapons against them.
Well, in America, they indiscriminately were throwing tear gas and like, you know, there's men, women, children, old people in the crowd peacefully demonstrating and then kicking off something like that. I mean, for me, it's atrocious. But again, police brutality is something which...
It's a fact of life.
We're familiar with it, especially black people are familiar with police brutality going on. Yeah. So, I mean, the Occupy, I mean, I stand behind the Occupy movement because I see it as, again, obviously, we are kind of helpless in one way.
Well, you're one of the 99%,
aren't you? Yeah, we're one of the 99%, so we have to, but it's
unless
like...
you're a secret banker, of course.
Nah, bruv, definitely not.
This is the thing. I think what's happening is people have just absolutely sick to the back teeth of what's going on, seeing the corruption within government, the corruption within the financial system, the corruption within the corporate sector, the destruction of our resources, all for a select few. Why the rest of us just continue to have all the resources to enable us to engage in some sort of social mobility taken away from us.
Yeah.
You know, and they expect us to sit back and be okay with that. Okay. I mean, No. We've had and this is the thing, man. This is the thing. It's like there's occupations in Bristol, in London, in Newcastle, in Manchester, in Sheffield, in Birmingham. There's one in Glasgow, in Edinburgh, in Bournemouth, in Brighton.
But don't you find it funny?
Bath.
Don't you find it funny that the mainstream media is only concentrating on London?
Yeah,
they're not really talking about all the occupiers that's going on all over the country, and that's very interesting for me. It's like, again, they don't want to give us all the information. Like, you know,
Mikey, I've got to tell you, the last week and a half has been actually really busy. We are actually, you know, we had a lot of in the last week, a lot of media coming onto site, BBC people, ITV people, you know, loads and loads of different radio and television people coming on, and it's kind of like, over that week and a half, we've actually seen them change their attitude a bit, you know, as support for this gets more and more, and it gets larger and larger every day, and they suddenly realising, you know, they're slowly opening their eyes, Mikey. We've spoken about this a lot in other programmes, about the mainstream media's, like, you know, reluctance to actually tell people what's going on.
But, I mean, the 6 o'clock news, I don't really see it. He just went through a list of all the different occupiers that's going on around the country. They haven't done that yet.
No, exactly. I mean, they're still being slow, but we are working on them. We are working with them, and I've got to say, you know, much to my astoundment, they are sort of getting a little bit more sympathetic and a little bit more sort of ready to quote us in context. You know?
I think one of the,
I don't think they've got a lot of choice, Mark.
No, not really. I mean, one of the great things that I'm seeing as well, it's like putting a tent up now. I mean, it's just simply putting a tent up is putting the fear of God into the system, man.
It's a deep,
like,
symbol,
and
now,
that
you know?
and the thing is, it's like just simply putting a tent up. If the system can be afraid of somebody simply putting a tent up, it must be ready to crumble, man.
You know what I mean? There's also this other interesting aspect, and I mean, it's no, you know, to some extent, you kind of feel a bit sorry. For some of these people that have been caught up in it, you know, like at St Paul's, the deans and the bishops, all that sort of thing.
Well, he lost his boy, he resigned, didn't he? Like?
Well, the thing is, you know, we must never forget that, like, as with Bristol City Council and all the other councils around the country, and also the Church of England, never forget this, they are corporations. Yeah, so although we're not at war with the Church, you know, and we do have an element of sympathy for them, you know, we've got to remember they're a corporation, and it's the corporation and the banks and the governments that we're actually, you know, not happy with, that we're trying to change. So, you know, the fact that these people are resigning, you know, leaves a lot of questions to be answered.
It does
answered,
leave a lot
you know?
Of questions, man. I mean,
very interesting questions.
We're getting
well.
To the end of the show. I mean, boy, today's show has just gone too quickly. I mean, just before we leave, Tony, Mark, let us know sort of, well, when you're coming back in next. Hopefully you'll be coming back in next Wednesday to sort of go through
in,
it.
Sure.
And, so where does the Occupy movement sort of go from here? We just need to get some more support.
Right, okay, well...
If there's anybody out there who has a grievance with the system, who has a grievance with the economic order, who has a grievance with capitalism, this movement is for you. This movement is your movement.
Come and join us. But also, Mike, I'd just like to say that, you know, here on BCFM, we'll be able to give you a daily update from now on. Here on BCFM, on various different shows, and, of course, every week on the typical tropical show, we'll be back to you with the latest updates and everything else that we can muster together to give you and...
Yeah, man. Well, blessed for coming in, Tony. Mark, it's been a pleasure having you.
Nice one.
Going to see you again soon. I'm going to leave you here with Skepta featuring End Up So Alive. Make sure you tune in next week every Wednesday, 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. on the Sony award-winning 93.2 BCFM. This is the typical topical Afro-tropical show. Peace, people,
week,
and stay safe.
Yeah, Skepta. Boy, better know. End Up. I never have a dream when I go to sleep at night. My dream begins when I walk outside. Now I'm on stage and I feel like I'm looking through Michael Jackson's eyes. Stories, rumors and accusations. So I gotta stay self-conscious of my hand gestures before they call me a mason or say that I'm working with Satan. But even a blind man could see. Oh, I never saw myself with a P. When you're looking at Skepta, you're looking at Grime. So the only thing I gotta stay true to is me. I don't need a helping hand. Stand up tall, I'm my own man. Find me on the tallest building in the country, singing as loud as I can.
I feel so alive. So alive.
S-K-E.
have I done? Bruh, everyone singing along to my boss, man. When triple platinum see me, I'm trying to do what Elvis done. And the stage is way too big for me. Labels never thought this guy from the ghetto could make all these girls sing for me. Nana, 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 nah.
This is BCFM 93.2, the community station for Bristol. Listen live online at bcfm.org.uk. BCFM News from the